Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. Today, we got a very special show for you on the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to talk with USC wide receiver coach T. Martin. Before we get to him, I wanted to say, if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you here on the podcast. Drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 206-888-6755, or you go right to our website, peristylepodcast.com. Click on the left side of the page and leave a voicemail right there from your computer. All right, we are joined by USC wide receiver coach T. Martin, coming on the program on the Peristyle Podcast. T, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for having it. It's the off season. Oh, by the way, if you can follow T. Martin on Twitter at CoachT17 at CoachT17, you might know. If you don't know T. Martin, you might know him from the 1998 national championship game, Tennessee versus Florida State. And my wife is a big fan of yours, T, because she's a UT grad. So she loves that we're going to have
baby.
You.
Yeah, go wrong. That's awesome.
Nice. So you're enjoying your time out here on the West Coast the last few years?
You know, I am. It's been a blessing, you know, for me and my family. And to be a part of the USC family, working with Pat Hayden and just having an opportunity on the Coach Kiffin, then being blessed enough to be on the staff with Coach Sarkeesian. It's just been great. You know, the community has embraced us. I've got a chance to meet a lot of people being out and about recruiting. My family, having young kids, playing little league ball and just being in the community. It's just been great and couldn't ask for a better place.
I think your youngest didn't just have a birthday. Is that correct?
Yeah, he did. He turned 3 years old yesterday. Wow. So he got his birthday and, then my 11-year-old just made the All-Star team in baseball, so we're excited.
Nice. Is he going to play football at all? Or?
You know what? I'm hoping he plays baseball. But he's grown up in football, and he's pretty much all-around sport. You know, he's so young that I just like to see young guys play everything. And, you know, he gets to high school, we'll figure it out then. But right now, I just like to see him have fun.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, it's I think it's good to be well-rounded as a young athlete there. But, man, you look at what those baseball players make. It's football. You know, there's no guaranteed contracts and stuff.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, there are a lot of benefits to playing baseball. You know, they play longer. You know, they do have long seasons, and it's a tough way to get to the majors and so on and so forth. But they play forever. And, again, you know, contracts are different than football. But, you know, hopefully he's blessed to do something like that, and I'm just trying to find a way not to have to pay for college.
That's good. Well, I think if you're a coach, if you stayed at USC till he was 18 years old, can't your kids can go to school for free, right?
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. I would love to stay at USC that long. it's a lot of good in that. But, there are some tuition remission type programs set up at most universities.
Oh, cool. Well, I wanted to talk about kind of the upcoming season, but maybe give a little kind of recap of what was going on in spring and kind of get your thoughts on, how everything went with the wide receiver core in spring.
Yeah, really challenged the group coming into spring, having lost two really good football players with Nelson Aguilar and George Farmer leaving the group, and we even count back to Victor Blackwell. Not being around, you really look around the room, and there are three guys who we started the season with last season that we won't have this season going in, or going into the spring we wouldn't have. So that was a challenge for young guys who had been around the program but not started many games or haven't played a whole lot to really step up to the forefront and take their positions, you know, be responsible, commit themselves to consistently producing and to be the guy, you know, having a young Juju Smith coming back when it was his first spring practice, and Dory Jackson first spring practice, and then having a healthy Steven Mitchell, Darius Rogers, who really, with Darius, is really the most experienced guy in the room now, along with a few of the walk-on guys, with Christian Tolbert and George Katrib and Robbie Colans. But other than that, man, we were a young, fairly inexperienced group that got challenged to get better every day of spring. And some guys really did make some strides to show us as a staff that we have something to be excited for heading into summer camp.
Yeah, the it's funny, but maybe we can jump into that now. You mentioned some of the walk-ons' names, and we were out there at the player-run practices that, as people know, you're not allowed to be there as a coach, but we can go check out. And at the end of the practice, David Maelstrom, who's a transfer from Virginia Tech, was like doing these little trick plays on the side. Yeah, and he did a backflip catch, which was kind of crazy. I mean, you guys have some really talented walk-on receivers.
Man, David is the coolest kid, man. That's my guy right there, man. Today, I think he used half of the bottle of hair gel so his hair slipped back. But that's my guy right there, man. Very athletic, like you said, Virginia Tech transfer. That you know, he was interviewing for Wall Street 1 minute, and the next minute he was coming to practice. And so, just an amazing young man. Excited about him. Robbie Colans from Palo Verde has been awesome. Christian Tolbert, George Katrib, who last year actually earned a scholarship for the team, and then Aaron Miner. That's a group of guys who walked onto the team, paid their own way to go to college, and there are a lot of universities that would love to have those guys as scholarship guys. So, you know, we've been fortunate to really have those guys be the players that they are. You know, we're not scared to play them, and as you guys have seen over the last couple of years, they've had games where they've helped us, whether it be on offense or special teams. You know, we aren't scared to play them. They come in, they earn their spots, and their teammates respect them, and we let them play.
Yeah, it's they've really impressed me. And I guess the good thing, and I don't know if you can actually even talk about this, but with you guys coming off sanctions, you're probably going to be in the mid-70s for scholarships. But some of these guys, maybe a benefit of the sanctions, could earn scholarships, these walk-ons, because you guys are still going to be, you know, 9 or 10 total scholarships under that 85 limit. So it might be a benefit for them to help get those numbers back up. These guys, and it seems like the receivers, you have more than your fair share of guys that have been in the program more than a couple of years, so they wouldn't count as an initial scholarship, and are good enough and talented enough to play. I mean, it might be good. You might have a whole bunch of extra scholarship receivers come the fall.
Yeah, you know, it has been a balancing act, so to speak, you know, with Coach Sarkisian and our staff. Of there's so many guys who've helped us through sanction, and there were times where we wouldn't have been functional, you know, at practice and in some games if we didn't have quality walk-ons. And, you know, our hats are off to those guys, and we try to do the best we can and do what we can to help them when there's money available, when there's an opportunity to put a guy on scholarship. Sometimes it's for a year. Sometimes guys stay on, and, you know, some guys get on and they come off. But I think Coach does the best he can, you know, really trying to balance that and give guys their fair due, you know, for earning a scholarship. And hopefully it can help some guys out. But I don't know how many we'll be able to do that for or not. But Coach does the best he can to show them some love, so to speak.
The one of the new players on the squad that you got to see in the spring was Isaac Whitney from Riverside, a bigger guy. They list him as 6'4", but I don't know. He seems more like a 6'3", 3-ish kind of guy to me. Yeah. But, you know, 200-plus pounds. What did you see out of him this spring?
Yeah, man, he's explosive. You know, to be 6'3", 4'4", 4'3", 8 guy. Last we timed him. Really smooth, great hands, physical blocking on the edge. Man, had a lot to learn. You know, he came in and had a full class load, and he passed every class, didn't drop a class, didn't miss anything. Just a quality, quality person. Comes from a great family, a lot of support there. And just a young man who understands his opportunity and understands the sense of urgency given that he has 2 years to play. And he's come in and worked his tail off and gained the trust of guys on our staff and the team as well. You know, but he's a big play guy who is bringing something to the table that we really hadn't had in a while. You know, since I've been at USC, you know, I think the tallest receiver we've had has been 6'1", you know, really, George Farmer. Darius Rogers, and now you get the opportunity to add Isaac and DaQuan Hampton to the mix of guys who have size and can run. And so that's something that we wanted to do in the recruiting class, was to go out and find really, really fast guys or find really big guys. And we were able to do both in those two.
Yeah, DaQuan Hampton is definitely a big guy. He looks significantly bigger than Isaac Whitney, who's a big guy too. We got to see him out at the last Thursday, first time we saw him at the player run practice. And man, he looked like he could come in and play tight end when they really only had Caleb Wilson, the walk on from Sarah, was like the only tight end out there. But you see DaQuan Hampton, like, he looked like tight end size. He's certainly someone that we haven't seen around in the USC uniform playing wide receiver for quite a while.
Yeah, you know, he fits the mold of, you know, when you thought of USC receivers, you know, when I used to watch USC, you always thought of those big guys, man, Keyshawn Johnson and Mike Williams, Dwayne Jarrett, you know, just big guys, you know, that could run and make those, you know, like I call in the paint type catches, you know, basketball in the paint type rebound catches, and really can body people up and in the run game. You know, those guys help you out a lot in the run game. And so it's good, you know, to bring size to, you know, kind of balance out the, you know, Juju and Steven Mitchell and guys like that who are, you know, your speed type guys, athletic guys that you want to have in space.
Yeah, he's gonna be someone to watch. I remember seeing Mike Williams for the first time. I think he was wearing number 19 when he was like coming out to practice, and then they ended up switching him to number 1. And you're just like, who is that guy? Because he was like a 3-star recruit coming out of high school. Hampton kind of reminded me of that a little bit. Just like, whoa, that's someone you have to watch. He was big enough and he made enough plays out there that, like, you know, he wasn't like he was just big. He looked like he was athletic and could run as well.
Yeah, you know, and hopefully it continues to translate and keep learning. You know, I'm excited to have him. You know, Isaac was there for spring, but DaQuan pretty much made all the practices he could. He's been working hard to learn the system, and just excited to have both of those new faces in training camp.
One of the Scout did a piece on some of the breakout players for the Pac-12 in spring football, and one of the guys they had mentioned was Steven Mitchell. And, you know, coming back, you know, from Mission Hills, Bishop Alamede High School, coming back off the knee injury, it looks like he's got that spark back. I mean, what did you see from Steven Mitchell out there in the spring?
You know, what I saw in the spring was a continuation of what he had been doing towards the end of the season. When you really watch him, it was a crazy number. I think like every third time we attempted to throw the ball to him, it was a touchdown toward the end of the year. And so it showed his explosiveness. And the tough thing for Steven was that, you know, he was Nelson's backup, and Nelson's one of those guys that just would not want to come out of games. So it's hard when you're talented, you know you can play, but your opportunities are limited. And I think what it did was motivate Steven and really show him that, you know, Nelson is gone, it's my time. And so he killed it in the weight room. I mean, just really worked hard. And then coming into spring, man, he was outstanding. The most productive receiver in the spring for us, least amount of drives of all of them, and just really made explosive play after explosive play. So really have a two-headed monster there with Steven and Adoree Jackson and guys that we try to move around to get them opportunities to get the ball in the space. And, you know, he showed us that, you know, he's a guy that we can depend on there.
You know, Darius Rogers, I think a lot of people are kind of waiting for that breakout. He has, you know, there's flashes. You see it there. He's, like you said, he's one of the bigger guys. He was the biggest receiver that you guys had, maybe along with George Farmer. But what do you kind of expect from Darius Rogers, and what did you see from him in the spring?
Yeah, Darius, his confidence is shooting up, really, you know. And I saw it this spring, you know, really him just being confident and knowing the plays that he can continually make. You know, Darius has strong hands. He's a really good route runner. He's a physical block on the perimeter. He plays on special teams. You know, Darius is really an all-around receiver. You know, really not much that he can't do. And so, you know, we've depended on him and relied on him to play different positions throughout his career. I think now he's just that veteran guy that's seen it all, so to speak, and now he's ready to take the next step and be in that top 1, 2, 3 rotation of catches, attempts, and production. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that. You know, we know what he's capable of doing, and we're just ready, you know, this year for the ball to be spread around to them all and see what he can do.
We got to talk about Juju because he was, you know, played most of the season as a 17-year-old. And like you said, losing the guys that you lost off the squad, he looks to be the leader, even though he's still 18 years old and, you know, finishing up his freshman year of college. I mean, did you see him kind of progress throughout the season? And do you expect a freshman like that to be able to come in and assume some sort of leadership role?
Right. He's, you're born with that stuff. You know, it's not me. It's not USC. You're born with it or you're born without it. You know, he's just one of those kids that's a natural born leader. And no matter what his age, I can imagine in a little league, people say the same thing about him. And so, you know, he just came to college and he expected to start. You know, he never sat in the back of the line. He never, you know, accepted not being a starter, you know. And that was from the first day of training camp. You know, really, he and Adoree really just came in the door saying, "Yeah, coach, I belong here. You know, I'm supposed to be here." and they never looked back. And you love that as a coach, the competitiveness, that maturity factor. And, you know, you lead by example when you're a young player. And, you know, Juju's a guy who came in and worked his tail off and really earned the respect of the players on the team and on the offense. And what he did on special teams, what he did as a receiver. And, you know, as you get that respect, you become a little bit more of a vocal leader. So with Nelson leaving and George Farmer leaving, some experienced guys, you know, he has taken on that role a little bit. But, you know, we spoke this week, you know, last week. I really just talking about, you know, I want you to focus on yourself getting better. You know, you're so young, you don't need an added stress of feeling like you have to be the leader. You know, just continue to get better, continue to work hard, and that stuff will come. And so, you know, I'm just looking forward to his development, his personal development, and ultimately Juju Smith gets better, we're a better offense because of it.
Yeah, he's wearing the number 9 that we've seen with Marquise Lee, and I think there's a lot of similarities there. Just both players were, you know, highly ranked. Juju was a 5-star, of course, but, you know, both I thought and both a lot of the analysts thought they would come in and play defensive back, come in and play safety. And it was kind of a surprise when Marquise Lee started off a wide receiver and tore it up. And same thing with Juju Smith. And it's just like it's hard to picture him going back to the other side of the ball when he's playing so well at receiver. But are there other similarities, I guess you could say, between those two players?
Well, extreme competitors. You know, Marquise would die on the field if he had to win. You know, he would scratch, claw, do whatever it took to win at anything. You know, always wanted to be first, always wanted to just dominate guys on the field. And, you know, they're similar in that regard. You know, Juju's just more of a physical specimen. I mean, he's 215 right now as an 18-year-old. You know, and, you know, Marquise was probably 190, 195 at the most, you know, throughout his career, maybe got to 200 for a brief minute. But he's just a physical specimen that, you know, his game is different. You know, Marquise was your big play, get behind everybody, that type of guy. And Juju's, he can do the intermediate game. You know, he's really physical in the running game, and he also has that, you know, that ability to be an explosive down the field, vertical type of guy as well. So, you know, Juju is a different guy. You know, he's, you know, definitely what you want if you had to build a receiver to do the things that he does. That's what you're looking for.
For you in general going on right now, it's just the coaching life. It seems like you guys are busy all the time. You're coming out of the May evaluation period where you guys are on the road and seeing a lot of players. What's kind of the time frame for you now? I assume a lot of the camp stuff. What's kind of keeping you busy now?
Yeah, you know, recruiting never stops. So day to day, you're in contact with players and really trying to get them up for unofficial visits if you can, or, you know, get them to camp where you can see them and be around them, get to know them and coach them and see how they respond to coaching and all of that. You know, the evaluation process never stops. And then you're trying to prepare yourself for training camp and your opponents, you know, for next season. So, you know, it's a pretty busy day, you know, this time of the year. And leading up to summer vacation. We're thankful to Coach Sarkisian for allowing us to have the month of July off. So we try to get as much as we can done in the month of June before we come back for training camp. So, you know, we're pretty busy as a staff on both sides of the ball.
And now you obviously can't talk about specific stuff in recruiting just because you're not allowed to talk about anyone that isn't signed. But kind of in general, you know, depth is a little bit of an issue. So, you'll likely have multiple signees come February. What kind of – like what are you really looking for as far as – do you want more, you know, big receivers? Do you want a variety? Or, you know, what are you kind of looking for?
Playmakers. Get guys that get the ball in the end zone. You know, very productive guys. I rarely go in saying I want a this and a third. You know, sometimes if you're getting small, you realize that you need size. So it may be that way. But ultimately, if the big guys can't play, then you got to get the shorter guys that can. So for me, it's about playmaking ability. It's about guys that can put points on the board and, you know, make those explosive plays. And that's what makes our offense tick, is guys that can be explosive, that can take stress off the run game and allow us to be balanced. So, you know, there is an overall idea of what you want, but at the end, you want to take the best players. And so, you know, fortunately for us, there's some really great players out there, and we have our eyes on them, and hopefully we can find the best one.
Yeah, there's a ton of talented wide receivers in just in Southern California, that you have a lot to choose from that you guys are recruiting, but there's all, you know, also nationally, and you know, you're from the South, from Mobile, and like I said, went to Tennessee. You guys recruit the South, and you bring guys out of there. What are the kind of challenges of trying to, you know, recruit a kid from SEC country and signing them and bringing them out to Los Angeles?
The only challenge is distance. You know, that's really the only challenge is that. And, you know, you have to identify the right candidate. You can't just go east or south and think just because you offer them, you're going to get them or you even have a chance to get them. Some kids have never watched the Pac-12 games before. Most of them have never been to the West Coast. Most of them are asleep when we play, you know, so they don't even watch your games. So you have a challenge of, number one, getting them familiar with the style of play in the Pac-12, getting them familiar with the names. You can ask some kids sometimes, name some of the coaches in the league. They don't even know them, you know, but they can name every coach in the SEC. So, you know, that's a challenge. Other than that, once we get them on campus, once they understand the brand of USC and the education we have to offer, the networking at USC once you're done playing, the NFL tradition, the winning tradition in college football, and all the many, many things that we have here at USC to sell, a lot of them, their eyes open like, wow, I didn't know that. And once they get it, then you're in the picture. And usually, once you hit fall, you kind of have a good idea of the ones that you want to continue to recruit. And the ones that you have to just say, hey, man, we don't have a shot. And just be smart. You know, you don't want to waste time and resources flying across the country. And one of the blessings that we have at USC is we are located in Southern California and LA. That's a talented hotbed. So, we are really looking for guys across the country that can come in and help us right away, guys who want to play for USC. Hey, guys who understand what it means to be a Trojan. And so, you know, it's not for everybody, and we don't try to make it for everybody. You know, and that's usually how I am. I'm really humble when it comes to that. You know, like I said, it has to be the right candidate. I would like to think that I can sign everybody, but that's not true. And once you realize that, you know, you're not wasting time chasing ghosts.
Now, you're known as one of the, you know, great recruiters on this staff, and you've been around for a little while, so you've recruited during those sanction years. What was it like going from signing in the 15 range, you know, with a couple extras or whatever going on, but and then having pretty much a blowout, we can go almost a full class, signing 24, 25 guys? How different was that for you going through that recruiting process from non from sanctioned years to not to the one non sanctioned year?
You know, one of the silver linings in the sanctions was that we had to be really, really good talent evaluators because you could rarely miss. And, you know, in every recruiting class, you're going to have some hits and you're going to have misses. A lot of times you have more misses than hits. You know, it's really hard, you know, 4 or 5 star, whatever the rankings are for guys, to really evaluate if or not it can translate to college football at this level of college athletics. And so, we really had to cross our T's and dot our I's. It was slower to offer. It was really having to see guys in camp, really having to go to their campuses, evaluating them, and really as a staff agreeing on pretty much every move that we had to make, because not only was that affecting your current recruiting class, but you had to look ahead to see what guys were graduating at what position. And then, my God, we had so many guys to leave early as juniors as well. And so some of that stuff, you know, blindsided us during those times. And I thought we did a heck of a job considering the circumstances of, number one, acquiring some of the best talent in the country. And really look at last year's draft, our first 3 draft picks, 2 first rounders and a 4th rounder were from the state of Florida, and guys who were national recruits. And so, you know, following up this year's class of, you know, guys that were really one of the first classes that we were in the middle of sanctions, and those guys still decided to come play at USC and go to school at USC. And so now when you have a lot more scholarships, you know, you really feel like, wow, we have a lot, you know, but you're able to really gain depth and really create competition at every position. And that's one thing that you miss a little bit when you're in sanction is your ones may be great, but maybe not the guy that's behind him or the guy on the other side of the ball that he's practicing against every day. You know, you lose a little bit of that, but hopefully in the next year or two, we can get that back, signing a few full classes and getting out of sanction.
That's a really interesting point that when you're limited, you really have to be on the ball evaluating. And I guess when you have a bigger class, I mean, could you slack off a little and be like, oh, we could miss a couple, but you knew when there was only 15.
Well, you really have to be on the ball still, but at the same time, you may be able to go on a guy who's a developmental player that may be a red shirt type guy.
Okay.
As opposed to if you had 15 or 18, it's hard to do that because you're looking at a situation that you're saying, this guy's an injury away from playing. So can we offer him? Is he physically ready? You know, all of those intangible things that you look for a guy who, if you look at it, we led the nation in freshman starters during those years. And it wasn't because we wanted to sell that in recruiting. It was because they had to play. And so you miss out on a guy like St. Nelson, for instance, whether he would have came out as a junior or not, I don't know. But if you look at a guy like that in a normal year where Marquis Lee and Robert Woods were already proven, and you sign a high school running back, you may have redshirted that guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, Nelson Aguilar comes in, had to play, you know, and he got that experience as a freshman and sophomore. And during the year, he's gone for the NFL. And that's just the world we live in today. You know, guys want to play early. And guys are coming out early and leaving as juniors more often. And so you have to look ahead as a staff and try to predict that as much as you can so that you make sure you're covering your needs in your recruiting class.
All right, Coach, one last one for you. I just wanted to talk about, I think I brought this up with you a little bit during the spring, but we get this question a lot about the blocking and wide receiver blocking, how important that is for the entire offense and how much emphasis you guys put on. So I don't know, maybe if you want to talk about what you do to try to get the wide receivers to get out there on the edge and seal things off and try to open up some holes for some of these guys.
Man, I love it. You got to remember now where I came from now. You know, I came from Tennessee where we were one team and we had guys that were physical blockers on the edge. You know, blockers for Jamal Lewis and Travis Henry, all the great running backs we had there. And I was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, where we had Hines Ward and Plaxico Burress and all these big wide receivers that, you know, Jerome Bettis running the ball, and you got those big pretty cats out there blocking, and then those things set up those plays and that average at receiver where you're averaging 15, 20, 25 yards a catch and making explosive plays and getting one-on-one matchups. So I understand how it all works and how it all helps itself, you know, where if you're not doing those things in a run game as a receiver, it's easy, number one, to know when you're running a route or when the team is running the ball. And number two, I don't respect your play-action game as much as a DB if you're not doing a good job of blocking us in the run game. So I think all of the guys here over the years that I've been here have been committed, and they've had pride about it. They've number one, been unselfish for their teammates and wanting to do it. And once the kid wants to do it, it's just a matter of heart and just getting it done and finishing. And that's something that I look for in recruiting. That's, you know, it tells a lot about a player, a receiver, or that's unselfish enough to want to do it and then tough enough mentally and physically to go out there and get it done. And so, but, you know, you think about it, it goes back to us talking about sanctions. We were having to get players that could play on all the special teams. You know, you go back to Juju and, you know, Dory Jackson and Marquise and Robert and Nelson, all these guys who've been in the receiver room that have started on not just one special team, but multiple special teams. So, you know, you're talking about guys who are just tough-minded individuals that, you know, they can help us out in many ways.
You know, I said it was the last one, but I guess you mentioned Adoree Jackson a couple of times. So I guess quickly on that, he's a, you know, he's a defensive back. He's playing multiple positions, special teams, and wide receiver too. How much time do you get with him? Is he in the receiver meetings a lot, or does he have to stay in the DB meetings? And is that a challenge? Even though he's talented, is that a challenge to get a guy that's kind of part-time receiver?
I tell you what, man, Adoree Jackson is one of the most intelligent football players I've ever been around. You know, he gets football, and now looking at him in track, seems like he gets track too. But he's just one of those rare, you know, I was watching the show with Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson not long ago. You know, every generation or so, you have these rare players that just kind of get it all, you know, whether it's baseball, football, or whatever. He's one of those guys, man, that just gets it, you know, and he puts his mind to it. He can see it once or twice, and he got it. He can study plays a little bit here, a little bit there, and he has it. You put him out there in the field, he gets one or two reps at it, goes in the game, and he does it right. I mean, he's just different, you know. And so those type of players don't come all the time. And certainly it's been a joy, you know, coaching him as a receiver coach and seeing what he does on the other side of the ball and then again seeing what he does on special teams. So. But no, it is a challenge as a coach because you're nervous when this guy hadn't been in every meeting and he hadn't taken every rep, and then you put him in a game and expect him to do it perfect. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's just a kid that doesn't need a whole lot of reps, and he can go out and still perform.
It's really funny when you think about signing day 2014, Coach, that, you know, Juju Smith and Adoree Jackson were two guys that, you know, picked USC on signing day. It's hard to imagine where this team would be if those guys didn't end up picking USC, because it came down to the wire, it seemed like, for those guys.
Yeah, I lost a lot of hair recruiting them. I think the hair is coming back. It's turning gray. But no, man, they were certainly worth it, you know, and our staff did a great job of going from one head coach to another during the season, then another after the season. We really went through four coaches doing their recruitment. And it's a testament to everyone that helped, you know, past staff, current staff, Coach Sarkisian, making a seamless transition, getting to know them, getting into the living rooms, meeting the families, and really making it all make sense for those players and their families to make a decision to trust and believe in us and where we're going as a program to choose USC. And we're excited to have them.
All right, it's T. Martin. He's the wide receiver coach for USC. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach T, T-E-E, at Coach T 17. Check him out. He's all over social media. You got to do that now, Coach, right, because of the recruiting aspect.
Man, well, Instagram and stuff. Well, you know, most of my family live East Coast, down south, and it's hard just sending everybody a text message. So it all started off wanting to do that. But then, of course, with recruiting, that's an everyday way to communicate, you know, with your recruits. And that's a benefit in having social media. But, you know, mainly it's for the family and friends, just trying to stay in touch with what's going on.
Oh, what's your Instagram? I don't really do Instagram. My wife kind of handles the account, but what's your Instagram?
Oh, it's the same thing, CoachT17.
Okay.
Same as my Twitter.
Is the kids do the Instagram more than Twitter now, or are they kind of moving away from that? Or?
Oh, man, kids on Snapchat, they're on Instagram, they're on every new thing you can find, they're on it. You know, it's so much stuff out there, but mainly I'm seeing Instagram, Snapchat. Twitter is kind of a way to send direct messages, but I know a lot of people are using those other means to communicate as well.
All right. Well, Coach, thank you so much for coming on to the Peristyle Podcast. Really appreciate you taking some time out and talking during the offseason. It was a lot of fun.
No problem, Ryan. Fight on, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Coach. And everyone else, thanks for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. Have another show tomorrow. Stay tuned for that.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.